I'm Demelo Roberts, stage and studio on Arts Watch. The Fertile Ground Festival of New Work starts April 10th and runs through the 26th, and you can find out more about that at fertilegroundpdx.org. There are dozens and dozens of stage readings, world premieres, and works in progress in this citywide festival that's actually extended into Hillsborough this season. All original, all new works. Because there are so many arts events, I decided to focus on four female playwrights I know in the festival: Sandra DeHellen, Josie Seed, Alicia Christiansen, and Erin Rachel. I've asked them all the same two questions. And I'm starting with veteran author, poet, and playwright Sandra DeHellen. She's presenting a stage reading of her play, Blue Roses. It's based on an historical what if. Blue Roses focuses on the fictional meeting of Tennessee Williams' sister Rose and the sister of JFK, also named Rose. So here are the two questions I've asked all four playwrights. What was the spark for your piece? And describe that moment. And why is this work the right moment at this time to do and for people to see? So let's start with playwright Sandra DeHellen. Hey, Sandra.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about the spark, that very moment that ignited you to write Blue Roses.
I'm not sure exactly when it happened, but it must have been during the first play I wrote about Tennessee Williams. I did some research at the time, and I was very interested in his life because he lived in St. Louis. I spent part of my growing up in St. Louis, and he was a playwright, and I was a playwright, and he went to University of Missouri, so did I. So, you know, I was very interested in Tennessee. And I wrote a one-man show for Michael J. Toofel way back when. But then I just was like, wanted to know more about Tennessee. And I kept reading. And I learned about his sister. And then I read more. I've read so much about Tennessee now. And watched his videos and interviews. And I get really sad about him. Anyway, I just kept thinking about him and his sister. And then I remembered that JFK, who was a big hero of mine, although I wasn't old enough to vote, I would have. It would have been my first time. That he had a sister that also had a lobotomy. And Tennessee Williams' sister had a lobotomy. And I just kept thinking about that and what that must have been like. And what if they met? What if they met at the same insane asylum and had this experience? So I said it in 1940, and because I'm from Missouri, rural Missouri, I said it in Fulton, Missouri, at the insane asylum. And then by that time in real life, but certainly in the play, Rose Isabel Williams has already had a lobotomy, but they are considering doing another one because she isn't quite fixed yet. She isn't able to work. She won't work. And she still does sex talk, which is one of the things that got her in there in the first place. Her family couldn't have her talking about anything sexual. And she was. Because she was abused, sexually abused by her father. And when she started talking about it, they slapped her in an insane asylum, which is what happens sometimes. And then as I continued my research, I found that Rose Marie Kennedy's, she was a really bright kid, and she did great in school, and she was really good at math. And then, as she started to mature, she was kind of feisty, and she really liked boys. What a surprise. In that family, JFK was notorious for his sexual escapades, and so they were really, if she didn't get engaged right away or anything, and she didn't have a really steady boyfriend, and they got really worried, and they just couldn't control her. So off she goes to the hospital. So that was the spark, I guess.
So of course they called them back then insane asylums, right? So my second question, why now, this moment?
We're in a wild world right now. And everybody's questioning everything. People have a lot of anxiety. They, in the olden days, they might have been locked in their rooms or houses forever, all of us, because we're so anxious and about what's going on in the world. And the other main thing is that I really believe in stories. And I think we all need to be able to tell our stories, and we need to listen to other people's stories. And that's how we can find in how we're connected. We're not all going to be the same. We're not all going to think alike. We're not all going to have the same politics. But we're all human, I think, most of us anyway. And so, you know, I think stories are important. That's why I write plays. It's why I write books. It's why I write poems. I believe in stories. And that's why now. There's also, which I didn't say, but I would like to say, and that is that the Blue Roses is not only about these two women who get lobotomies from this wild Dr. Walter Freeman, but the thing that really struck me about that was how different their experiences were from women of the working class, young women of the working class in the 1940s. If they were sexual, if they got pregnant and had to get married, I mean, they had to get married. They had to have the kid. They had to raise the kid. They didn't get to go on and have a life. And that's what happened is societies just removed them from society at all because they were too much trouble. So, yeah, it's about that. It's about the class differences. It's about race differences. You know, it is political. It doesn't hit you over the head. It has comic relief, but it's a drama. I can't deny that. It's pretty hard to laugh about lobotomies.
Well, if anybody can make it happen, you can, because I've seen your plays. And thank you for this time. I think I'll announce who's in it and all that on the webpage. But thank you for taking the time to do that. And I'm on a personal level, Sandra, I just want to say I'm always amazed at your perseverance, you know, because you have done so much theater and you have written so many books and poems and plays. And I haven't asked this of everybody else, but since I got you live right here, what keeps you going?
What you just said. It's the writing. Writing keeps me going. I mean, I write almost every day. I wrote every day from 1987 until 2025. And then I finally thought, you know what? I should probably retire. Sort of. I don't have to do this every single day of my life. And I was. I mean, holidays, birthdays, if I was sick, if I had a migraine, it didn't matter. I wrote. But now I'm a little more lenient with myself in that. And the thing I like about writing for theater is that sometimes I get produced and I get to be involved. I love being involved in theater. I love everything about it. I co-founded three different theater companies. Co-founded the first one with my friend Kate, and we were also writing collaborators for a while. And then when I moved to Portland, I founded the Portland Women's Theater Company, which lived for 12 years. And then around 2007, I founded Pen Play, which was made up of playwrights and screenwriters. And I wanted it to be truly multicultural, and it was. I was real proud of that, but they were a lot younger than I was in the head. They wanted to do it, you know, put on a play every month. And after 3 months, everybody was like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. So we went on hiatus and that didn't happen. And honestly, if I were in better health, I would revive my first theater company. It was called Actress Sorority and it was only for women, but it has the word actors in it. And I think in these days, it could be for anybody, but from a women's point of view, or that female energy point of view.
Yeah. Femme.
Yeah.
Total femme. Well, thank you for this. You are one of our unsung treasures in Portland. And I hope everybody comes to see it. I certainly will. Thank you, Sandra DeHellen.
Thank you.
Blue Roses by Sandra DeHellen runs April 18th, 19th, and 20th at 2110 Theater. More info at fertilegroundpdx.org. We're going to continue our coverage of our four playwrights, female playwrights in Portland. Next up, we have actress and playwright Josie Seed. Josie has a history of reimagining the classics and writing plays for a modern audience. As well as being a fantastic actress, she's a fantastic playwright. Her play, House of O, is inspired by Shakespeare's Othello and is getting a staged reading at Lionstorm Playwrights at Artist Repertory Theater on April 10th at 2 p.m., which is the very start, almost the very start of the Fertile Ground Festival. So I asked her Two questions. Here they are again. What was the spark for your play? And why is this work the right moment at this time to do and for people to see?
It really gives an interesting view into my creative, imaginative brain, I think. I don't know if other playwrights, other people do this, but just randomly, I will get into this place where I am thinking about this play, this book, that show, whatever. And I was in this space where I just was thinking about Othello. I've seen several different versions taking several different viewpoints of the story, you know, bringing in this type of character, that type of character. And whether or not it's obvious, House of O is inspired by Othello. I probably should have said that at the beginning. But anyway, one of the things that I hadn't seen was Iago as an African-American woman. I've seen lots of different, like I said, versions, but that's just something that I had yet to see. And so it started there with what if Iago was an African-American woman, and how would that change the dynamics of all the things that were happening? I think another thing that sparked it as I was considering this angle was as I looked at these characters, especially Othello, Iago, and Desdemona, they have different names in my play, but these archetypes, if you will, I just wanted a little bit more depth. For example, like Othello felt like he was this, you know, greatly celebrated person, but that his anger and his jealousy just was like coming out of left field, because he's, you know, this great kind of benevolent, even, you know, general. But then all of a sudden, he flies into this rage and kills his wife that he's supposed to love so much. And so I thought that was just so curious and interesting. Iago as well, right? Like, Iago is just this mean dude that, like, you know, is just mad out of a place of entitlement. And that happens, right? And that's real. But I'm like, what if it looked different? What if it came from a different place? And once again, that interesting element of what if they were of the same race? So that was the spark. And I kind of just took off from there. And, you know, I'm like, where could all of this be in a place that felt a little more charged, a little more realistic, that these stakes were so high and this passion was so robust? And I'm like, the fashion world, that's where we're going to do this play. So that's just a little taste. And I think that is where the spark came from. And we'll see what happens. Let's burn it all down. So one of the things I love about you, Dime, is that you go in there, you get deep, and you make people think. This question really made me think. Why is this work? Why is it the time for this piece? I feel like, as I thought about that, at the heart of this is the question. Well, there's a lot of questions, but one of the big questions is, what lengths will you go to right what you see as a wrong? And I'm going to try not to give too many spoilers, but how do you set things right? What do you do? What will you do to set things right when you realize maybe you've made a mistake? There's a whole lot of, like I said, complexity happening within this piece. Why do people love each other? Does there have to be a right way to love somebody? What's getting in the way, right, of honesty and being able to see somebody like for really who they are as opposed to who you think they are? And is that wrong? So many questions. And one of the big ones, like I said, is if you see somebody going astray, what are you going to do to try to get them back on the right track? And are you going to take responsibility for that thing? Because, you know, without getting too deep into the current goings on in our country and in our world, that question of accountability, it's not really being addressed in ways that we've seen in the past, right? So I think that this might be kind of another facet of how we're going to get our people back to where they need to be.
That was actress and playwright Josie Seed. The staged reading of House of O is April 10th at Artist Rep at Lindstorm Playwrights, which is also presenting other playwrights, so check them out at fertilegroundpdx.org. Alicia Christiansen is a playwright whose source material comes from Kristen Tarani's personal experience. When I Was a Mexican, a Bollywood musical, follows a woman named Anna whose milestone birthday pushes her to finally search for her father. But the story her mom told her all her life about her father being Mexican doesn't prove true. Let's hear about Alicia's spark for this musical.
You choose sisters. You choose sisters. They are yours for life. The sisters you lose, not worth the strife. Better than blood, thicker than...
I am the co-producer on this piece with my friend Kristen Tirani. I'm also the person who wrote the books and the lyrics with lots of assistance from Kristen. She is the inspiration for the story, and the spark for this story comes from a time that she and I were on a birthday trip with a friend of ours, a co-friend of ours, somebody that we each knew individually and that introduced us to each other, actually. And as we were at this birthday party, we were all just sharing stories and talking as women do when they're gathered in large groups. So there we were in this group of women, and Krist started telling us about her life story and her search for her father and her family. And we were all just so entranced by her storytelling and by this particular story and set of circumstances and what brought her to knowing her father and meeting him when she turned 50. And so it was one of those situations where we're all talking together and she's telling us this and we're like, wait, this sounds a lot like, I think I probably said, this sounds a lot like Mamma Mia, except the middle-aged woman version of Mamma Mia. In Mamma Mia, the young protagonist is searching for her father and comes up with a plot to bring the three potential fathers together. And in Kristen's story, she's not a young woman in her 20s getting married. She's a middle-aged woman having this time of realizing I'd really like to figure out who my father is. I've gone through my whole life being raised by just my mother, and then putting together my own found family is basically what Kristen has done in her life, which is so admirable. She's a real gatherer of people. She's a community lover and just this warm, generous person. And so she thought it was time, though, to really find who she'd been looking for her whole life, which was Ray Martinez, her father. That's her mother said that your father's name is Ray Martinez. And so pausing on that story, as we were tossing all these ideas around, somehow it came up like Mamma Mia, but not the music of ABBA. What if we did Bollywood music instead? That could be a lot of fun, because who doesn't love a good Bollywood musical? And I had done playwriting, and my friend, our mutual friend, who was having the birthday, and I met doing high school theater together, and we've been friends ever since. So theater is definitely part of our conversation and things that we talk about, even though our mutual friend and Kristen both work in public health. And I think I'm the only one of the group who still does theater on a regular basis for my job. I'm a teacher of theater and I do playwriting and directing and things like that. So tossing this idea around, I think a lot of them thought, well, that's a fun idea at the end, but it stuck with me. That spark stuck with me and implanted itself in my mind. And a couple of years later, I still couldn't get it out of my head. And our mutual friend, Kristen, had lived in Portland and I live in southeastern Portland area, suburbs, Gresham. And so we were acquaintances, but not really, like, we didn't get together or anything without our mutual friend. So our mutual friend, Iman, bought a condo in Portland recently, which brought Kristen and I back in each other's orbit more frequently, which was a lot of fun. And we connected. And I said, hey, I'd like to work on this musical that we brainstormed, this Bollywood musical. Are you okay with that? What do you think about this? Should we move forward with it? And she was agreeable. And so she and I met together, talked through the story, talked through the characters. And then basically, I, with her help, developed the first draft. And we put a scene out with just to see what the response was, got some positive feedback from people. And then we've moved forward and applied for the Fertile Ground Festival based on the first draft of the script. I wrote the book and the lyrics with Kristen's help. Because we were the recipients of a GROW grant, we said, okay, there is some interest in this, which leads us to the next question of why this piece right now. it's interesting for me as I've been working on this story as a person who comes from rural Oregon. I was born in Boring, Oregon. And well, I guess I was technically born in Portland, but raised in Boring, Oregon. And this is my background. But two of my best friends growing up, one was from, her mother was from the Midwest and her father was from Korea. And another one of our good friends growing up, my good friends growing up, the one that's the mutual friend, her mom was from, I'm not even sure, somewhere in the, I want to say like the Midwest. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, someday, Iman. And her father was from Pakistan. And in both instances, these girls growing up and going to high school with me, we were, you know, they were unique in that they came from households where multiculturalism was part of life. And that was not necessarily the case for most of us at good old Sandy High School in rural Oregon. And for Kristen as well, she didn't grow up with us, but she grew up in another rural part of Oregon and had this multicultural identity that she was living with as well. Her mom, who raised her, was white and her stepdad was white. And this sense of multicultural identity is very much of this moment and questions around, I think, for anyone. And the thing that's been surprising for me while working on this is how much this story resonates with people who maybe don't even have a multicultural background like me. And a friend of mine who I had read an early draft of the script, who is from the Midwest, from Kansas, actually. And he said, this story resonates with me because I was adopted at birth and I didn't ever know my birth parents. And, you know, as I get older, I want to search for them and I'm looking for them. And that people have this sense of trying to figure out, who am I? What is my identity? Where do I connect? Who are my people? Where do I belong? And who is my family? That question of what defines family? And if the people that I'm raised by, I don't relate to, are they actually my relatives? These are the questions that come up in this story. And it's very relevant to a lot of us, especially with the idea that everyone wants to find that sense of belonging. I really think that this play will connect with people. I want to say that as we shared it, an early draft in Portland last summer, Jai Tripathi, who is our director, recommended for this Fertile Ground stage reading. He recommended to me, although he was camping last summer and not able to make it to our first, like, let's gather some people and just read the script and see how it sounds out loud. He wasn't able to make that, but he recommended Mini Sharma Ogle, who has become integral and a huge energy force for this project moving forward, because she, as an immigrant from India, absolutely identified with this play. She is raising her children in a multicultural household with her husband at this time. And she really gave so much positive energy to this, saying, thank you for this story. Thank you for the representation. Thank you for telling these kind of stories and making these kind of opportunities for artists in Portland, which I full-heartedly support. It's been interesting as we've been going through and developing this to see how the story is evolving. The project is evolving. We thought at first, we just want to get on board a composer who can compose some real Bollywood music for us, which we have done. Balamurali Balu is the composer. He works with Indian film scores. And in working on this, he's developed a couple of really amazing songs that we're so excited to share with audiences in our Fertile Ground Festival offering.
Everyone has a family. Everyone has someone they can say, hey, she looks like me. Or at least she looks at me. We see, together we're seeing. We see, together.
And then on a lot of the other songs, we've realized this song's going to be better with a composer who is more informed by a Latina, perhaps, approach to music. And so we're working on that right now. We're trying to engage other, and some of it is very much rural Oregon, and we need to develop relationships with composers from that genre and see where this goes. But we're excited about this moment of bringing together different identities, different cultural upbringings, and seeing how does this inform our conversations of who am I and who is my family and who am I related to. These are timeless, important questions for all of us.
Alicia Christiansen.
Thank you.
the staged reading with music and I believe dancing of When I Was a Mexican, a Bollywood musical, runs in two locations, Hart Theater in Hillsborough on April 10th at 7:30 p.m., and three performances, April 22nd through the 26th, at the Boiler Room Theater at Portland State University. Go to orartswatch.org or fertilegroundpdx.org. Finally, we feature Erin Rachel's musical play, Unbound, a bookish musical. Erin is both a playwright and a composer. I saw an early staged reading of her musical about a young divorced woman working to save her neighborhood bookstore. And here's a clip from Unbound.
Hi, I'm Erin Rachel, and I am the writer of the book, music, and lyrics of Unbound, a bookish musical. The spark for this piece and the moment of inception, if you will, goes back to a conversation that I had with a songwriting mentor of mine. I was kind of new to songwriting again after a long period of time and shared a few songs that I was kind of shyly proud of. And one of the best pieces of feedback that I received from this mentor was to write something specific. And I think at the time, as I was getting my songwriting and lyrical legs underneath me, was really scared to write about something so specific because I was afraid, I believe at the time, that it would not necessarily make me feel vulnerable, although that was, I'm sure, part of it, but I was explicitly trying to be relatable. So I would end up writing things that were very metaphorical and very generic, I would say. And I was being intentional about that. I thought that was a way to, again, have more people relate. And the feedback that I received from this mentor was to go specific, to go hard into detail. And I think looking back in retrospect, that seems obvious. I think that happens with prose pretty naturally for me as a writer. But for some reason with songwriting, I was just in this land of metaphor. And so I instead tried to write something very, very specific. And I realized, even though perhaps it was informed by, personal perspective or whatnot, writing what I knew, I realized that it wasn't really my point of view I was writing from in the terms of the song specifically. And it ended up becoming the, titular song of the show called Unbound. And I realized it wasn't my story. And I just became a little bit obsessed with whose story it was. And that led to me exploring the characters of this world and the character, from whose point of view I was sharing for this one song, and also the world around her. So Unbound is about Jane, a recent divorcee who comes back to her hometown to work at the Love neighborhood bookstore. And the bookstore, she comes to find out, is in trouble. And she attempts to save the bookstore, and in so doing, finds an unexpected community. There's a little bit of a vexing neighbor next door who owns the bar next door, which is called the public library. And so it's their story, the story of the neighborhood, the story of the street, the story of the store, and the story of what it means to find this resilience of creative community. I think that this work it's the right moment to do this workshop. It's, this Fertile Ground opportunity allows us to do our first full-length developmental workshop. The show is still in development, but I think it's a salient topic because the show really is, as I said, it's about community. It's about creative resiliency. It's about what it means to let go, to start over, to come to a type of wit's end. Each of the characters in the story, the ensemble included, has felt a type of ending either currently or in the past. And how we deal with what is ending, I think, is the great work, at least of my current life right now. I think the work that we have to examine the institutions and the systems, the situations, the environments around us, and ask ourselves, how much they are working for us, who's being left behind, who's being left out, who are being asked to be within those constraints. I think it's the great work of our time, and I see it happening in real time. It relates a lot to the work that I do besides, you know, writing and producing these musicals. And so it's a pleasure to bring this world and these situations to life and to light in a brand new way through story and through song, which I think is such an important medium. The musical, I think, is an interesting form. I'm actually more by trade a long form writer, a prose writer, novel writer. And so being able to explore for me this medium and really ask the question, one, does the story need to be told? And two, why a musical? What makes it a musical? And I've had to wrestle with that, trying to create this story from scratch without having any experience writing musicals before. And so for me, it's kind of it's a testament to the collaborators that I've been able to find. We've expanded from a cast of 9 to 10 now, amazing local artists and musicians and storytellers in their own right. And in some ways, in many, many ways, you know, this story is a tribute to them, to all of us, to the creators, to those of us who, despite all odds, have to tell stories, whether that be through prose or through poetry, through lyric, through music. This is kind of a love letter to all of it. So it really is a wonderful experience, and it's been a wonderful experience collaborating with so many of the artists and our music director, Daniel Buchanan, who owns a local music studio as well and has lent his creative hat to this process and has been a partner in many ways to the development of the show from the very inception, really. Just couldn't have done it without that amazing team. I think as an artist who has done a lot of solo work, like I said, novel writing, as you can imagine, is quite the opposite of creating a musical. It's a very isolating exercise to write a novel. And so since that's kind of the other hat that I wear creatively, as well as doing solo storytelling pieces, being able to be in this collaborative environment where characters come to life and where I am writing not just for the characters on the page, but the characters and the cast of people that I've gotten to know over the past year as this show has really started to be in active development. I'm writing for them as well. So it's really is a wonderful experience to see the show. And I say that humbly just because the cast, like I said, is amazing, and they really do bring this show to life. It's a joyful love letter to the resilience of the creative, wholehearted person who I think so many of us really are aspiring to be despite all odds. Thanks so much for this opportunity to share, and we really hope that you come see the show.
That was Erin Rachel talking about Unbound, a bookish musical. It has 9 performances at PSU's The Boiler Room Studio, matinees and evenings, April 18th through the 20th. So go to orartswatch.org or fertilegroundpdx.org for more details. And I encourage you to check out the whole schedule of the Fertile Ground Festival offerings at fertilegroundpdx.org. I have that link and more info, as well as this podcast, at stageandstudio.org or orartswatch.org. So many orgs, but that's it for Stage and Studio on Arts Watch. So till the next conversation or conversations, I'm Dimelo Roberts.